www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
Who the hell cares?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 15, Angels We Have Heard on High. And now here are my two angels.
No
gross. Take that back. Tara Ariana and Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah, ew. That made
Hello,
me feel
angels.
Uncomfortable. Hi.
You were spoiled.
Thanks.
How's it going, Sarah?
It's going okay. We're about to enter hour four of recording various podcasts today. So,
oh my God, it's
if
true.
You're looking forward to some of that good old back penis, mind losing.
Square
think,
back.
I think we probably have something special for you.
Let's get right to it because you're right. It is getting late. I have not even started my Americans post and it needs to be live in less than 5 hours. Okay, let's start with our A/only story. Christmas in March. Just kidding. It's only March here. It is, in fact, a very 1995 Christmas for the gang. As we open, Susan turns off her alarm and tries to extricate herself from under Brandon's arm, but then he's awake and surprises her by popping up under it. And oh my God, what is wrong with me? Am I actually filled with Christmas spirit because it's March and he's actually somewhat cute? I'm sorry. I made a GIF. You can see it. It's he actually looks cute. I think it's because his hair, whenever his hair is like not as hard, I'm more interested in his face. I don't know. He also hasn't said anything.
Yeah,
yet.
I did notice a like I took a couple screenshots of that too because I was like, oh, like it just seemed like he wasn't in Brandon mode.
Yes, he also hasn't talked yet, which helps. He's trying to find out why she is sneaking out, which turns out to be because she's embarrassed for all the other losers in this flop house to catch her there when they obviously know that she and Brandon are boning on the reg. She feels the same as when her mom caught her kissing her boyfriend in the eighth grade, and he tries to get her over her anxiety with some fucking... And downstairs, the front door opens and some very sensible low-heeled shoes flanked by suitcases step in. The camera pans up and it's Cindy! Fortunately for her, these idiots have already put up a shitload of Christmas decorations and it's all very festive, so she's pleased. And she calls Brandon's name and goes looking through the house for him. Susan's sexy giggles are audible in the hall before Cindy knocks on Brandon's bedroom door. And inside, Brandon and Susan are both alarmed. And then Cindy calls his name again and Brandon realizes who it is. Susan goes from alarm to horror. Brandon is amused until he goes to open the door in clip two.
Surprise!
Mom, what are you doing here?
Tone, motherfucker! This is the first time you've seen your mother in months. Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus. And this tone does not vary
throughout
the episode. So hope you like that, you know, he's a bitch about it because... Yeah.
And even before, like, he has a reason to be irritated with her, which, like, he doesn't, but he thinks he does. But at this point, he doesn't even know that. It's awful. Cindy says she's home for the holidays, as is her right, since this is still her house. She doesn't say that part, but it's true. Brandon continues glaring at her as, behind him, Susan creeps past wrapped in a sheet, which is funny, actually. Cindy is embarrassed that she's there when Brandon has company. Susan, still enshrouded, comes to the door to be introduced and say that she's mortified and glare at Brandon for a second before going to the bathroom, which is also cute. I made a gif of that, too. Cindy has brought drama with her, as we hear in clip three.
Where's Dad?
To tell you the truth, Brandon, right now, I don't know.
Ooh, what could that possibly mean?
Well, I considered looking up what James Eckhouse might have been doing when this was shooting, and then yes. I remembered I could not care less if I were actually dead and in the ground.
After the credits, we see that Jason Priestley directed this episode, so keep that in mind about all of Brandon's acting choices. Cindy is full of compliments, and Brandon is a bitch about it in clip four.
You know, I love what you've done at the house. You've really held down the fort for us.
Mom, what's going on?
I don't exactly know. I just had to get out of there.
Why?
Your father and I haven't been getting on very well.
What do you mean?
Brandon, Dad loves it in Hong Kong. This job has given him a new lease on life. I haven't seen him this happy since he was 20 years old.
So what's the problem?
I'm what's the problem. He's doing great, Brandon, but I have no life. You can only tour Tiger Bomb Gardens so many times. So your father booked us on a holiday cruise with his boss. I told him I wanted to have Christmas with you. We fought about it. He said he was going with or without me. So here I am.
I don't know what to say.
I don't know either. Except I'm sorry. Seem to be saying that a lot.
But you're going back, right?
I don't really know. Right now, I don't know anything.
What are you sorry for exactly? Like, your marriage is your business.
Also, you never had a life, so I'm not really sure what the problem is now. Is it that you don't have Anna to go to the gardens with?
I'm so glad you brought that up. It's true. That was her only friend, the one she paid and could barely speak English. So sad.
And, Nat, like, this is completely out of character for either of them. Mm-hmm. Jim adores her.
Yeah.
And would never give up the chance to visit his son slash boyfriend and talk about how much ass Brandon is getting. So, whatever. Like,
yeah.
No one cares about the parents' marriage.
No one cares.
Except Brandon, who's going to lecture them about it repeatedly.
Yeah, from his position of doesn't know a fucking thing about anything. And then Steve is in a country club locker room meeting his boss, Scott, and Rush. Scott has last-minute gifts that have to go out. Bad agency, get out now, Steve. Last-minute gifts should not be going out this late. But anyway, Rush volunteered Steve to deliver them, and Steve only hesitates for half a beat before cheerfully saying he's right on top of that rose. When Scott leaves, Steve bitches that Rush could have asked him first, and Rush tells him to stop whining and do what it takes to get ahead in this business. Good call, Rush. Val is over at Collins, admiring the portrait of herself that will be David's Christmas present. I mean, I would definitely want this painting, but it's a very egotistical gift to give. This is their discussion. Clip 5.
Wait.
Oh, what?
At least
what?
It's not a jigsaw puzzle.
Oh, true.
Okay, continue.
Okay, clip 5.
What do you think?
It's wonderful.
Thanks.
Well, I hope David likes it. But I still think we should have done it in the nude.
Yeah, well, and then we'd have to give Kelly a lobotomy.
Not seeing the problem. Yeah. I think she already had the lobotomy based on her hairstyling choices, but
you.
Okay.
Oh, it's true. The sides are very Kimberly after she ripped off her wig in Melrose Place. Just saying.
Oh,
minus the scar. The doorbell rings and it's a guy in sunglasses and a goatee, so he is definitely a drug dealer. Val looks suspicious as Colin pays him, and we hear this. Clip 6.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, looks like it's going to be a white one.
Okay.
I don't get it.
Where were we?
Planning on doing some indoor skiing?
It's for a friend.
Yeah, sure.
Look, I bought a gram of Coke for the holidays. You guys all drink and I don't. I just wanted a little holiday cheer of my own. It's no big deal.
No. If you want to put that poison up your nose, it's your business.
Actually, it'd be cool if it stayed that way, too. Kelly's a little sensitive about this.
Well, Kelly's sensitive about everything. You can trust me.
Thanks, Val. So I guess you don't want to do a line with me?
No. No, you're on your own.
Well, what's Christmas without a little snow?
Cut. And I don't mean the line, which you're taking seriously 20 minutes to do. It's just not that difficult.
Tip. Yeah. So lame. Also, you guys drink and I don't. Yeah, okay. Try that argument with anyone else, idiot.
Well, that's why you guys do coke, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because I drink and you don't.
Yep. Over to Steve's storyline, where Claire has joined him to deliver presents and eat Christmas cookies. A sexy lady opens the door in lingerie in the middle of the day, and Ian Ziering's delighted face is a poem. Please see it in the visual aids because it made me so happy.
So funny.
She opens the present in front of them. It's a toy oven, and she's thrilled and says she'll cook for Scott anytime. At the Peach Pit, Brandon has apparently just finished giving Val and David the latest on his parents, as we hear in clip 7.
Take it from one who knows there's no such thing as an amicable divorce.
Well, wait a second. Who said anything about a divorce?
Hey, my parents said the same thing. Next thing I knew, they were divvying up the garden tools.
Did you get a hold of Jim?
No. It's been impossible. He's on a cruise ship in the South China Sea.
You know, I always thought your parents were the perfect couple.
They're just human, David.
Well, if anyone can work it out, I know they can. If they don't, well, you'll get through that, too.
Thanks, Captain Platitudes. That's very helpful.
Also, I'm kind of surprised you didn't say, plus, they might end up getting back together anyway, like my dad currently is with his second ex-wife. But whatever. does not come up.
And also, I really doubt Dr. Mel Silver gave shit one about any garden tools.
Oh, God.
They just gave them to Cindy and moved on with their lives.
Thank you. Also, I'm not sure Sheila should have been trusted with garden tools either. Just saying, Nat rolls up to offer his wisdom on the situation. He's apparently previously been briefed on, to wit, sometimes people just need time alone. Brandon gets the feeling Cindy's not telling him everything, but Nat thinks there might not be more to tell. He is correct. Nat offers to talk to Cindy, and Brandon thinks that might be good and invites him to a tree trimming party that night. At the beach, Donna is trying to get into Joe's gift without leaving any evidence. But when she lifts the lid, a bunch of springy snakes pop out. There's a gif of her and Kelly's reaction, which actually seems pretty legit to the point where, like, the two of them are not such good actors that I didn't think they didn't actually know what was going to happen. Maybe it was just me. No.
Yeah, no, I assumed that they had not been told what was going to be in there. So
Kelly thinks maybe Joe knows that Donna can't be trusted. There's a card which reads gotcha, and Kelly is impressed. In his car, Claire and Steve discuss his dysfunctional relationship with Rush in clip 8.
No matter how bad it gets with him, I have to remind myself that he's not my real father anyway.
I don't think that's how these things were described even at the time, but the point is that it's apparently never come up with Claire that he is adopted, and this is the very weird way that she has found out. And they come to the next stop. Steve is delivering Darla Mitchell a gift from Uncle Scotty. Think you know where this is going, but it takes a minute to get there. So let's go back to Brandon, who is morosely unwrapping ornaments when Cindy comes to the doorway for a nice helping of tone in clip 9.
I guess this isn't exactly the Christmas you had in mind, is it?
Why would you say that, Mom? Just because my family's about to crash and burn?
Shut up, Dick.
I always love this part the most. It's like meeting old friends again. Oh, look. A clothespin reindeer. You and Brenda were 6 when you made that.
We were 7.
Please don't be angry with me. I don't think I can take that.
I'm not angry, Mom. It's just... The thought of you and Dad splitting up doesn't exactly go down very easily, especially at this time of year.
Honey, the people in your family will always be your family. No matter what happens with your dad and me.
How could he do this to you?
Don't blame your father. This is not his fault.
Then who should I blame?
Me.
Yourself.
You need to blame somebody.
I just don't understand.
Honey, listen. Your father has a whole new life, and I haven't been able to keep up. We just don't seem to have anything in common anymore. And to be perfectly honest, there may not be anything we can do.
That's impossible.
A few months ago, I would have thought the same thing.
Why isn't he calling?
I told him not to.
Great. That makes for good communication.
Brandon, right now, I just want to try to have a nice Christmas with my son. Okay?
Okay. I'll do my best.
I know you will. I know this is hard for you, but it's Christmas. Let's make the most of it.
Because I'm dying. The fuck?
You don't owe your child any explanation. He is in his 20s and you're an adult and it's your marriage. It's none of his business.
Yeah. Okay. And even if you've thought initially, mistakenly, that you owed him an explanation, once he starts acting like you track dog shit through the whole house, that's yours. It's time to be like, you know what? Let's just trim the tree and not talk, especially you.
Well, there is more of this, unfortunately, but first, we have a message for Jekka.
Jekka's friend Sheila tells us the two of them are fans of the show who love yelling, "Shut up, Brandon," at each other. Hey, so do we.
In honor of the birthday girl, Jekka, we're counting down the show's most important J's.
Number 5, John Sears. No friend to women, but an occasionally relatable Dylan McKay antagonist.
Number 4, Jesse, who's here not in second last place because he ruined Andrea's life right up to the point he got a job that allowed both of them to escape the zip.
Number 3, John Martin, father to Donna and the man who's cool enough to cover for Claire and David's sex tape after watching it, but not cool enough to have declined to marry Felice.
Number 2, Jonesy, because I probably would.
Me too. And number 1, the woman, the myth, the legend, the doorknob earring enthusiast, Jackie Taylor Silver. We hope you have more in common with her than just a shared first initial. But, you know, not that whole drug problem or history of divorces or a bitchy daughter like Kelly. Only the good stuff.
From all of us here and from Sheila.
Happy birthday, Jacka!
Moving on. After a commercial, the tree trimming is underway with a few classic rando extras, which you can see in the visual aids. And Donna is hectoring Joe, who is putting up yet even more Christmas decorations. He has no interest in giving her gift hints. By the tree, Susan is quizzing Brandon about his first Christmas in L.A. and the snow machine that he got for Cindy. Susan has a story about decorating a palm tree outside her then boyfriend's apartment building. She wrote a column about it, which he then edited in front of her. He sounds like a real cool dude. Speaking of which, Cindy and Val discuss the absent Jim in clip 10.
Glad to see Brandon's been lightening up. He's been taking this pretty hard.
Men always think everything's about them.
Jim kept asking me what he'd done wrong. I couldn't get him to understand that it wasn't about him.
Well, I'm really glad you're here anyways. Even though it's not under the best circumstances.
Me too.
You can see this in the visual aids too, but Val keeps looking at Cindy's mouth like this is going to end in a kiss. It's very weird. I mean, yeah. Cindy should.
Also, Cindy's hair is terrible and Val has this like half up curly do that is so mid-90s. It looks good, but it's very dated.
It's classic party hair of the era. The only thing missing because it's Christmas is like her in a handkerchief top that's like only a front with a tie in the back. Anyway, the last gang members plus Nat finally make it. Later, Donna resumes interrogating Joe about her gift, and Colin is very animated, holding forth with a classic New York story in clip 11.
So I come out of the subway and it's like 4 a.m. Christmas morning. I mean, New York is like silent night, holy night. And there's not a soul in Bryant Park except for this absolutely beautiful Puerto Rican girl. I mean, maybe she's 17. And she's sitting on a bench and she's like having a baby right there in the park, right there on the bench. So I look over and there's these like three winos standing around her, standing all around her like the three wise men.
And then what happened?
It's New York. They mugged her.
Oh, that's terrible.
No, I'm just kidding. We took her to St. Vincent's, and guess what she named the baby?
Jesus.
Howard.
She named the baby Howard?
She was a Howard Stern freak. She actually named the baby Howard Stern. Garcia.
I love New York.
I love you.
Shut up.
I need to hit the little elf's room. Excuse me.
Boy, Colin sure is Mr. Social tonight.
Well, I guess Christmas just brings out the best in some people.
Yeah, if you ask me, he's lit like a fuse.
Well, then let's make sure nobody asks you, okay?
Get your shit together, Colin.
Seriously.
God. Also,
I live New York. What?
R.I.P. St.
Vincent's,
the whole
story is so gross. Ugh, shut up.
They mugged her like a pregnant homeless woman. God, anyway. Also, Kelly couldn't clock what's happening immediately after living with Jackie, as if. Anyway, we're about to learn there's even more reasons why she should be able to tell what's happening. But anyway.
And be a bitch about it. Don't worry. She's right on top of that, Rose.
Oh, it's coming. And speaking of coming, sorry, Claire and Steve canoodle under the mistletoe in clip 12.
Where do you think all this mistletoe folklore started, huh?
Oh, I don't know, some love-starved European botanist, maybe.
You know, this is really turning out to be an excellent Christmas. You have a lot to do with that, Claire.
Well, I have a special present for you later.
Ooh, I love presents. Huh? What do you have, some mistletoe hanging from your headboard?
No, actually, it's on my garter belt.
That is a very risque joke for the time, I have to say, but good for Claire.
I know. And of course she has a garter belt. Get it, Claire.
Of course she does. In the kitchen, Nat heads out for midnight mass. Cindy says she will join him, and she's getting her coat when the doorbell rings, and it's Rush, who is surprised and happy to see her in clip 13.
Is Jim here? I'll take him out on the golf course.
No, I came by myself.
Everything all right, kid?
Uh-oh, now I ship these two. It happened so fast. Just all it took was him saying kid, and I was like, oh, Rush.
Yeah, I don't mind Rush.
Well, the scene goes on. Cindy admits that things aren't okay, and oh my God, you guys, clip 14.
Anything I can do?
Marry me?
Why not?
Seriously, though.
How did that happen? All of a sudden, the sexy Sam Elliott voice, and I'm like, oh,
so
into turtleneck.
So fast. He's like, you're right. It's the voice, but also like the old timey locutions. Like he's so silver foxy sexy, and I never saw it before. Like the two of them have so much chemistry. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's true. He looks a little bit too much like my dad for me to really go there. Yeah. But yeah,
I
see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Rush kindly tells Cindy not to take the end of her 20 plus year marriage too hard because it happens to the best of us, which is not the greatest advice, but these two barely know each other. And honestly, all Cindy might need right now is a hate fuck. And I bet Rush knows his way around a lady. Oops, I thought I was done. Turns out I'm not. Cindy excuses herself to go to church, leaving Rush to the very predictable shit fit about the fact that two of the gifts were wrongly labeled, not by Steve, by the way, so that Steve delivered Scott's niece's easy bake oven to Scott's mistress and the mistress's leather bustier to Scott's niece. Steve cracks up, but it leads to a fight in clip 15.
Dad, I just delivered the packages to the addresses on the labels. I didn't write them. I didn't screw up. Somebody else did.
Somebody else screwed up. That's your MO, kiddo. Somebody else screwed up. You mess up and it's always somebody else's fault. Just like the bloody fire.
You know what? I don't need to take that crap from you. I didn't do anything wrong. I've got nothing to explain to you.
Sometimes I'm ashamed to call you my son.
Then don't bother. You're not my father anyway.
I'll say that.
Why not? You're not my father. You got nothing to be ashamed about. Neither do I. Merry Christmas.
Steve. Steve.
Ooh. In Steve's defense, as I already said, it wasn't his fault at all. Scott should have been less careless and maybe delivered shit himself. Just saying.
And Rush is always such a fucking soap opera. I'm ashamed to call you my son. All right, Braveheart, take it easy.
In the foyer, Kelly does her Aaron impression in clip 16.
Colin, would you hurry up? I want to go home.
I don't know. I choose to believe that that's an actual joke because it's so much like Aaron in the two episodes ago that it can't be an accident. But maybe it is. Upstairs, Colin is doing the bump it takes to drive back to his studio. I don't know. In his room, Claire tries to comfort Steve after his fight with his dad. She's sure that his dad will understand, but Steve says he practically disowned him and finally acknowledges that the man raised him. Claire says that Steve will see Rush tomorrow and apologize. And then Kelly and Colin are saying their goodbyes in clip 17.
Well, thanks for everything, but we've got to get going. Picasso here is getting a cold.
Just allergies.
Uh-huh.
Picasso here? Such a dick.
Allergies? Anyway, Susan is heading back to her dorm for Christmas Eve. Wait, why is she here? Is it because she just went back for Thanksgiving? Thanksgiving is so dumb! Anyway, doesn't make sense why she's there instead of with her family other than Dad. But instead of saying in this lovely family home that she's just finished helping to decorate, she tries to get Brandon to go with her to the dorm, but he thinks he should stay because of his mom. But yes, but also it's a house. It's Christmas. Duh. Anyway, Dawn is asleep when her phone rings. It's Joe wishing her a happy birthday and a Merry Christmas at the exact time of her birth. She is touched. He says he'll bring by her gift in the morning. She wants a hint, so he gives her two. It's mostly grayish and it's interactive. Her guess is virtual whale. Not bad for having been awakened at 3:27 a.m., but she is wrong, as we hear in clip 18.
Okay, bird. Let's do this. All righty. Joe loves Donna. Joe loves Donna. Joe loves Donna. Come on, say it.
Damn, Bert. Joe loves Donna. Come on, you can do this. Joe loves Donna.
Cock.
This is a horrible gift slash burden, by the way. And then it's Christmas. Cindy is already up having coffee when Brandon creeps down to dig into his stocking. In addition to all the usual stocking things, there's a fancy looking watch. Santa must have touched down in Hong Kong for that one, she says. He finally thanks her nicely and says he loves her. She's glad that she went to church last night, and they discuss that in clip 19.
Did it help?
It always helps. Gave me some peace and made me realize I can make it on my own.
I know you can, Mom, but the question is, do you want to?
I don't know.
Mom, you and Dad have been together for 22 years. I don't care who's right or who's wrong or who's unhappy. Don't you think you owe it to each other to try to work this out? I mean, you can't just throw away 22 years because he wanted to go on a cruise and you didn't.
There's a lot more to it.
Butt out!
So you're unhappy in Hong Kong. So what? You won't be there forever.
You don't understand, Brandon. We don't know who we are to each other anymore.
But do you love him, Mom? Because if you don't, I'll just give up. I'll help you do whatever it is you want to do. But if you do love him, you gotta try.
I do love him. But I'm not sure that he still cares about me.
How many times do we have to say this isn't Brandon's business? Like,
no. Ugh. And then just the, like, pouty boo-boo kitty, like, well, then I guess I'll just give up. Like, yeah. Because yeah. You're known for realizing when it's a lost cause and stepping away.
The doorbell rings.
Out, Fugnutes.
The doorbell rings 1 second later, and I, for one, was certain it would be Jim, but it's a delivery guy with a package for Cindy. Inside is a small gold box and a note from Jim. Clip 20.
I love you, my angel. Merry Christmas. Hurry home, Jim. Oh, what a lovely angel.
Barf.
Brandon, I have to go call the airline. It's a reservation I need to make.
As gestures go, that's a pretty crappy one. Like, if you couldn't get James Eckhouse, maybe throw out the storyline, just saying.
Or get some real gold. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it looks really cheap.
Oh my God. Not for nothing, but what was with that Hepburn accent all of a sudden on Carol Potter? Like, girl, come on.
The next morning, Steve rolls into the Peach Pit. Rush is already there waiting for him. Reconciliation starts off chilly in clip 21.
Merry Christmas, Dad.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
I was out of line yesterday. No matter what went down, shouldn't have treated you like that.
No. I deserved it. I was out of line, but not out of line for a long time.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you there, Dad.
That's a change? Hey, remember what you said to me yesterday?
You mean when I was telling you to back off?
No. No, you're right about that. You're right about a lot of other stuff, too. But you're wrong about one very important thing.
What's this?
I may want to read what's inside.
It's adoption papers that have Rush's name as father.
This can't be.
Yes, it can. It's the truth.
No, it can't be. I went to New Mexico 3 Christmases ago. I found my grandfather. I saw my mother's grave. Her name was Karen Brown.
Yes, it was. Your mother was Karen Brown. father.
Okay, sidebar, by the way, and you can see this in the visual aids, it has his adoptive mother's name as Iris Sanders, because I guess some prop person just started working on the show this season. Iris is Dylan's mom, guys. You mean Samantha. But anyway, Rush also, by the way, has a gorgeous opal pinky ring on this scene, which you can see in the
visual aids.
Oh,
no, that's been in the visual aids before.
Oh,
is it? He was styling it when they were in Palm Springs.
Okay, it's, I missed
yeah.
it. I forgot that it's a perma pinky ring. Anyway, what happened was he was doing a picture in New Mexico because he's Robert Evans, I guess. He met Karen and knocked her up. Because Samantha couldn't get pregnant, as Rush put it, he bought his own baby, which, more problematic language. You would think that Steve would be thrilled to have one living biological parent. He is not. Clip 22.
What do you expect me to say?
I don't know what I expect you to say. It's the truth. I thought it was about time you found out.
Damn you. Do you know what it's been like for me? Do you know what it's like to cry yourself to sleep at night?
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? Sorry doesn't cut it. I'm sick of people being sorry for me. Sorry doesn't make up for all the years I spent staring into strangers' faces to see if they looked like me.
I understand.
You understand. You don't understand. You let me think I was abandoned all this time.
Steve, I tried to do the best I could for you. I gave you the best the money could buy. I gave you the best clothes, the best toys, the best of everything.
But you didn't give me what I needed the most, Dad. Truth.
I couldn't tell you the truth. Your mother never knew. I couldn't tell her. I still can't. It would break her heart.
What about my heart?
Son.
Sorry.
You may give it whatever you want. But you gotta know something. I love you. I always have. And despite what you think, and despite some of the horrendous things I've said to you, I'm so proud to have you as my son. You have a nice Christmas.
Oh my God. Cut!
Ooh. I don't... Steve has such a turn... I only included those two very long clips because he has a complete change of mood in like three scenes from now, so I don't know what the point of all of that was.
I don't either. Was it to give him his Carrie Matheson Emmy reel clip? Like, given the writing, Ian Ziering is doing the best he can. But the... Kelly voice reading of "What about my heart?" Like, oh Jesus, are we in an anime now? Yeah, I don't know. Plus the whole, like, the language they're using around this, like, I know it was 20 years ago, but still.
Mm-hmm.
It's just,
yeah,
you weren't
abandoned, you were adopted by a loving family, and that was what Rush owed you and what he gave. There's more Christmas to come, but first, we have a message from Maria.
Ioana and Markilla's sister Maria is celebrating her 40th birthday today.
They would like her to know, and we quote,
"You are so much more than the, quote, other sister to us." In honor of your birthday, and since we're currently entrenched in the sixth season of 90210, here are six reasons your party would be way cooler than anything the Bev Niner Squeefs could come up with.
Number one, we'd make sure after wrecking Mondale that Brandon's ass stayed in jail. Forever!
Number two, no one will pass out on the bathroom floor from taking too many diet pills. Seriously, Kelly, we already learned our lesson about those from Amanda way back in the first season.
Number three, we can afford to do a lot better than racist Brooks dot matrix printer banner.
Number four, you won't have to worry about your lemon of a car ending up trashed and spray painted by Barb at the end of the night.
Number 5, our dad is smart enough to keep the guns locked up, so Dead Scott might actually make it to his junior year.
Number 6, we would hire a musician much more talented than Ray the Hobo Clown to play in the mood room. Ravon!
From Ioana and Markella and all of us here,
Happy birthday, Maria!
And then Donna, Joe, Colin, and Kelly are at some fake snow sledding thing at the marina, thanks to the Rose Bowl. I don't know. Steve is in a good mood, but won't say why. Kelly is cold, so Colin goes to get her hot chocolate. Donna basically demands her present from Joe, and then Colin bypasses the hot chocolate stand and goes behind a shed or something at this children's event to do another bump off his Swiss Army knife or some shit. And when he comes back with hot chocolate in each hand, Steve pitches a snowball at him. Colin retaliates. Wholesome fun is had by all until Val hangs back to chat with her dear friend Kelly in clip 23.
Notice anything strange about your boyfriend lately?
No.
Kelly's high as a proverbial kite.
You're just having fun, Valerie.
Face it. He's got a nasal problem.
And how do you know? Did you give it to him?
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't blame Val, but seriously, Kelly, open your eyes. You brought this on yourself. Everyone ends up back at the peach pit where I assume homeless are in the process of being fed because it's Christmas when Steve crams everyone into the corner booth for the big reveal about his paternity. Everyone is as excited as it is reasonable to be, which is moderately. Colin heads off to the bathroom again because I guess he has diarrhea on top of his allergies. Darn the luck. Nat brings Donna a cupcake with a candle in it and she's obnoxious about Joe's gift some more. And when Colin comes out of the can, Kelly's waiting for him in clip 24.
What were you doing in there?
Going to the bathroom?
Really?
What's your problem?
I don't have a problem, Colin. You do.
Yeah? What's that?
Wipe your face and your nose.
Okay. Colin, you should be better at this if this is not your first cocaine rodeo.
Yeah, really.
Joe returns to his dorm room to try once again to teach his phrase to the stupid parrot. Back at the Welsh's after dinner, Rush wants to make a Christmas toast. He knows that everyone knows about him and Steve and makes a toast to fathers and sons. Steve is touched. Cindy also makes a toast to mothers and sons, and Brandon adds good friends, and then the doorbell rings and it is still not fucking Jim. It's Joe with a gigantic box that he opens to reveal the stupid bird. Donna's thrilled. Joe tries to get it to say Joe loves Donna, but it only says damn bird instead. I did not clip this under protest. Donna is delighted anyway. And apparently Cindy is leaving Christmas night. Okay. But before she can go, Colin follows Kelly into the dining room because apparently they've gotten through this entire family Christmas dinner without talking. Anyway, cue fight, clip 25.
Why are you being so cold to me?
Why do you think, Colin?
Come on, Kelly.
Don't you, have to go to the bathroom or the little elf's room?
I'm sorry. Look, I know I broke a promise to you.
Yeah, you did. You promised me this summer that you wouldn't do it again. I wanted to believe you.
It was just for the holiday. 1 gram, and it's gone. It's over. Can you forgive me?
I can if you mean it. If you don't lie to me.
I'm not lying. Come on, it's Christmas. It was a stupid mistake. You know what? I don't know what I was thinking. It'll never happen again. I promise. Okay?
Okay.
Okay? I mean, again.
I mean...
Go ahead.
Speaking of having to break up, like, just break up. He was fucking his art dealer for, like, a year.
Uh-huh.
And didn't tell you. And now this, like, just not.
Yes, totally. But also, if this has already been an issue in their relationship to the that they had to, like, have an ultimatum about, like, why couldn't she recognize all of the signs that even David could tell? I mean, yes, David was also a drug addict, but still.
Well, and... she is busy like marching out of the room and then slowing down and very performatively waiting for him to come and kiss her ass while she's sulking, like whatever.
Yeah.
You deserve him. Fuck off.
True. And then Cindy is saying goodbyes in the foyer in clip 26.
I love you all.
All?
It's a bunch of college students you never even met before, and you've been there one day. What the fuck? Oh, whatever. We're done. Bye.
Yep. Before she gets in the car, she wants to stand there for a moment and remember all the good times. Brandon is glad his parents aren't getting divorced, it seems. Cindy misses the house every day, but this trip has made her realize that home for her is where Jim is. Yeah, that's how marriage works normally, but great. I'm glad off screen Jim isn't going to have to make his own dinners, I guess. The end. Most valuable player. Even though she was kind of ridiculous, I'm going to still say Cindy because I loved seeing her again. I missed her.
I'm going to go with the bird. Poor thing. Free the bird.
Damn bird. Least valuable player. Brandon, the legal adult who made his parents' marital problems all about him.
Yep. And the tone. Yeah. No good.
Tone indeed. God. All right. Let us do the user challenge that's replacing the Kim challenge and go with Trivia Girls. This is from at WW Leader Amy. Five ways Donna/Tori Spelling proves nepotism leads to an inferior product as seen in this episode. Sarah.
That they couldn't tell her that those snakes were coming out of the box because otherwise she wouldn't have been able to get the take.
I didn't mention this, although it is in the visual aids. There's some weird hair clumping in that same scene, which you can see. And if it were anyone else, they would probably fix that. But she probably thought it looked good and no one wanted to tell the boss's daughter. She was wrong.
Oh, yeah. They just left a pin in there. I clipped that, too.
Yeah.
The boob cavern from her, you know, back alley boob job.
Now and forever. Also, there's probably a way someone could have made the present begging endearing. She did not.
And they cast like the only quote unquote actor on earth who's more wooden than she is to do comedy in her storylines to make her look good.
There we go. That makes five. Woo! Thank you, WW Leader Amy.
Yeah, that was a tough one. Next time on Again With This, New Year's, more like Boo Years. We've got to deal with Steve's stupid stepbrothers, Susan's snotty ex, and more damn bird stuff to ring in 1996. You're probably going to need to break into Colin's stash before you peep our visual aids for this and all the other Again With This episodes at previously.tv. You'd follow us on Twitter at previouslytv and follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm nasal problem Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. I'm here with lobotomy Tar Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tar Ariano. And not our real dad, David T. Cole, is also on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.